Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
Okay, welcome back to the No One Fights Alone podcast. It's Max Morgan with me today. Austin's off and running around and scurrying around. Max, what's up, bro?
How are you, man?
I'm good.
Good. Glad to be here.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guests because we're going to talk about where we're at. Welcome, Garrett and Summer Dutson. I forgot your last name. Hey, that's kind of a thing with me. I mess up people's names all the time.
So
I apologize.
So do you? Yep.
Do you? It's always the last name for whatever reason.
I probably would have said Butson.
Yeah. Dutson. Uh-huh. Garrett and Summer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So we are in sunny Orlando, Florida at the Concerns of Police Survivors National Wellness Conference. And you guys having a good time?
Oh, having a great time.
Isn't that nice?
And the weather is beautiful.
Yeah, weather's awesome. Better than Utah weather.
Yeah, that's right.
Very nice. Very nice weather here.
Max
gorgeous,
is
gorgeous facility.
Max has been reconnecting with all his old folks.
Yeah, yeah.
Peeps.
I came off the national board in July, so it's good to come back and visit with everybody.
See all your old gang. Yeah. Yep. Having a good time. And you guys have been, so Garrett works for Utah County Sheriff's Office.
That's correct.
Garrett and Max are partners, right? You want to explain that and kind of unpack that?
Yeah, Garrett and I worked together, at different times in our career. When I first went on to patrol, we worked together out in Eagle Mountain for a while.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's when the incident with Corey happened. And then throughout the last 10 years, there's different times. We work pretty closely together, even if we're in a few different assignments. But we work pretty close together most of our whole career.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Garrett, you and Summer both are Utah natives, right?
I'm a Utah native.
Summer. I was born in California and moved to Utah when I was one.
Oh, I love that for you. A little California girl.
Yeah.
At your heart. Do you still have family there?
I still have some aunts and uncles that live there.
Yeah. You go back once in a while?
Most of my mom came from a family of 12 kids, and most of them did migrate to Utah.
Holy cow. 12 kids is a lot. It seems like a lot, Max.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, especially for California.
It's a lot.
So you yourself, we might as well open that door. You two have how many kids?
8 children. So we have 6 boys and 2 girls, ranging from age 25 to 10.
Do you even try to remember their names?
Summer does really good with that.
Do you?
I don't. The 2 girls, I don't know why, but when I'm talking to them, I'll call them by the different name, and they have to correct dad all the time.
Yeah, one's Missy and one's Ellie, so it usually ends up as being Missy or Miss Ellie.
So I tested Garrett that when I found this out the other day. I pulled a test. I said, date of birth, ready, go. And you pulled it off, bro.
In order.
In order. I was impressed.
Month, day, and year.
Yeah.
So, Summer, I'll put you on the spot. Uh-huh. Do you mind saying their names?
Sure. Yeah, there's Austin, Harrison, Missy, Ashton, Hiram, Maverick, Marshall, and Ellie.
Holy cow. That's awesome. I love it. 8 kids.
They're cuties.
Yeah. And you two have been married?
26 and a half years.
I love that.
So, yeah. And strong and healthy.
Yes, love it. You can tell. You two get along really well. Now, how long have you been with Utah County,
Garrett? So I've been in law enforcement 17 years, and 16 years of that's been with the sheriff's office. In 2020, I snuck away and went to Harriman City Police for 1 year, and then I thought, I miss the sheriff's office. I want to go back. Harriman treated me super good.
Yeah.
I miss the sheriff's office.
Coming right back. Coming right back to Utah County.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I've been back there just over 3 years.
Yeah.
Garrett has done about everything in his life. He's been a mortician. He's been a bus driver. He's been
tour guide.
Tour guide. He's
farmer, beekeeper.
Yeah. Dutson Honey. is a phenomenal honey company in Utah.
No kidding.
They're, yeah, the best honey around.
It is. Absolutely.
It really is.
I'll have to look into that.
It's good stuff.
That's family business?
Yeah, my grandpa started it in 1935, and then my uncle ran it, and then my brother bought it, took it over five years ago. So
instead of honey, you chose criminals.
I did. I always wanted to be law enforcement. I can remember back in kindergarten, they'd have you like draw your hero, and it was like law enforcement, and then Officer Friendly would come to school, and I'm like, gosh, I'm going to be a cop.
Love that.
So,
well, let's dive into it here a little bit.
Ask him what Summer said when he wanted to be a cop.
What, Summer? What did you say when he wanted to be a cop?
Well, I mean, he is 120 pounds and very nice. And he just didn't look like a cop or act like a cop, like what I pictured. So I just pictured, I had a different like image of what a cop should be. Now, obviously that's changed because I realized that there are some very nice cops out there, him being one of them. But I just didn't think that was what he was.
She said I was too nice and too small. And yeah. I get beat up. And so for the first 10 years of our marriage, I did everything else under the sun. Like, you know, she's like, what else do you want to do besides law enforcement? I was like, there was a lot of different things.
Motivational speaker or something. I don't know.
So then I was like, all right, let's do. And then finally she said, I can see you want to do law enforcement, so go for it. So
you do have a good speaker voice. Good presenter voice. Yeah. So. Is he still nice, Summer?
Oh, he's so nice. He's too nice.
He's so nice.
He is.
You do come across as a nice guy.
He's really sweet. He's a good husband. Yeah.
I'm kind of like Max. We probably get more warnings than we did citations. So.
That's very true. Yeah. Very true.
Well, Max is a nice guy, too.
He is. Very, very.
So you and Max, let me dive in here a little bit. You and Max, identical, critical incident. I know Max had talked about his line of duty death. That's the connection that you have. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how Max and I met a long time ago with co-workers, and I know we'll get there since we're at Concerns of Police Survivors. I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about co-workers. But your take on Corey's line of duty death, let's just talk a little bit about that. And then I want to talk about how that impacted your home, how that impacted your marriage, maybe your kids even. But I spent a little time there. But tell us about Corey and what happened there.
So So it happened January 30th, 2014. And just to backtrack, I guess, just a little bit. So we, Summer had given birth to our last child, in December of 2013. And not realizing that I could have taken maternity leave for my other children, I was like, what? We can get a month off? Paid? All right. So I took the whole month off. And
you missed 7 months off previously.
No. I was like, this is maternity leave? Dang it. So I was like, all right. So I took that, and I was scheduled to come back the first week of February. And Corey called me on a Monday night on that last week of January and just said, hey, we are shorthanded. Can you come back to work early? And so that week, we were scheduled to work Wednesday, Thursday. Those are the only 2 days. And I thought, yeah, I can come back. That'd be fine. And then he called me Tuesday night and said, hey, my vehicle's broke down on your way to work. So I lived about 45 miles from the city of Eagle Mountain where we were. That was my area of patrol at the time. And so Corey called and said, hey, do you want to come pick me up? My vehicle's broke down. It's at the shops. They're working on it. So I just need to ride out to the big Eagle Mountain. So I went and picked him up. And this was on the 29th. We went, as we were driving, I just remember, you know, we're talking about life. Corey had 6 months left until retirement or eligible for retirement. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he just built a new house, and he's like, I don't know if I should retire and go find something else or stay because of the new house payment costs. And and just family and work and everything like that. And then Thursday morning comes along, and I'm out with Max, and then we had our detective and our animal control out there with us. Corey was out and about. He came out just, it was probably about lunchtime, because that morning it had been snowing, and there had been, for me, a bus had slid down a hill and hit a mailbox. So I called Corey on that just to ask him, like, do we get highway patrol involved in this? Cause it's a bus. And so we talked a little bit, and then, a neighboring city had a shoplifter, that was, had ran out of the Walmart, and the plate, the registration came back to a city, just west of where we were. So Corey had pretty much IM'd us and asked us all to go out and start looking. Max went down a certain road, and I took another road out to, it's very open. There's, it's more desert. So we just went and looked around certain things. And then we went for lunch, and Ride usually come with us to lunch, but that day he decided not to, and he continued looking for these suspects. And it had been a couple hours since we'd been out looking. We didn't see anything. We went to lunch, and then we all went our separate ways. And then Corey had called out on a motor's assist, and it was pretty much, you know, motor's assist is not a high-stress call. You're just checking to make sure everything's okay. And then they couldn't get a hold of him on the radio as they're doing a, what we call a code 4 check. And Max went out there and checked on him and realized the situation was not good. And he had called down into our office. And so I jumped in my vehicle and ran up there. And I kept thinking all the way up there, it was like, why would, at the time, Max thought Corey had taken his life. That's what it looked like at first. And I'm thinking, why would he do this? Why? And I'm racing. The roads are slick. I went sideways once with my vehicle, and just trying to get up there. But I thought, why would he do this? Why? And then we get up there, and then we realized the situation was that he had been shot multiple times. You know, and with that situation, and myself and Max, while we're on scene, multiple sheriff administration would come up to us and tell us to go home to your families. And we're like, no, we're staying here. You know, this is our sergeant. We want to make sure this, everything's taken care of. We want to escort his body to the state medical examiner's office. And I remember I called Summer. I can't remember, Max, if we were told to call our spouses, or I think we just made that decision, was just let our spouses, because we didn't know if it was in the news yet. We didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I think we just made the decision, because I think we did it. I did it early on. I sent a text. Well, I called Becky, and she didn't answer. She never answers the phone when I call. And so I just sent her a text, because I knew things were going to start hitting the news. You know, I mean, this is going to get out quick and stuff. And I just sent her a text and said, hey, in case you hear anything, I'm okay. I'll call you later, you know? And so, but yeah, that's, so I think we just did it on our own.
And I remember calling Summer just real quick. And I just, she answered, and I said, Corey's been shot. He's dead. I'll talk to you later. Just real quick, just let her know that I was okay.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
Pause. Summer, do you remember that?
I do remember that. He called me and he said, Corey's dead, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, we're going to go chase down the bad guys. And
what's going through your mind?
My stomach drops and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I open up my laptop and I tried to find the police. Like, I thought there's gotta be some sort of online police scanner waves or something. And I found something, and I listened to the scanner for a couple hours, kind of feeling panicked, and did actually hear when one of the officers got shot, and I didn't remember Garrett's call number, so I didn't know if that was him. My oldest son, who was 16 or 17, finally told me just to close it and close the laptop and stop listening, Mom. Yeah. So I did, but I thought for surely he had gotten shot and killed too. So I was,
and I think you tried calling back a couple times.
I did, but then I didn't want to, if they were busy and doing right. stuff, I didn't want to interfere. And
sure.
So it was a pretty stressful afternoon.
Of course.
I was, you know, seeing my life flash before my eyes.
Right.
And figuring out my next steps if he had yeah. died.
And knowing he's out there.
Yeah.
Garrett's out there. Just, right?
Yeah, it was.
And she just heard that, you know, officer down. So now she's like, is that my husband? I can't get him on the phone. My son's like, turned it off, you know, right. And then she patiently waited for a couple hours before I made contact with her.
I was very grateful when he finally came home.
It was a few hours. I mean, when we found Corey, it was just after 2 o'clock. And then it was a couple hours after that, that our other coworker had been shot. And then it was probably another almost hour after that, that they actually found, you know, the suspects. And
it'd been a while.
You know, it'd been a little while, been a few hours. So, I mean, it went on for, you know, the whole scene, several different scenes went on for a few hours.
Yeah.
You know,
and Ride, it was interesting because 15 minutes before he checked out on that car, he had sent me, an IM, because it was regarding my GPS puck. He couldn't see where I was at. He says, hey, can you just make sure your GPS puck's working? And that was 15 minutes before he made the initial check on the motorist assist. Wow. So, but I did not see that until after the situation was over.
Yeah, taking care of you. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, I certainly don't want to ignore, you know, Corey in that tragic event, but I would actually like to spend a little more time talking about how that's impacted you, because Max has shared with us in a previous podcast a lot of details about Corey. But how does, Summer, I'll ask you, I'll start with, how was he when he came home?
I don't remember, actually.
Sure.
I do.
But I do know that he, for the next week, he was mourning.
He was
pretty down the next week.
Sure.
But you say.
So when I came home that night, our two oldest were still up. And I don't think you had told them. Austin, I think, knew.
Austin knew.
I don't think Harrison knew, but we went up to the medical examiner's office, Max and I, and then I just drove straight home, and I just remember walking in and seeing Summer, and we just gave a great big embrace and hug, and then I went downstairs, and I remember when I told the kids kind of what had happened, that's where I really started getting emotional, because I think it just really hit, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is for real.
Right, right.
Sorry.
It's okay.
But it was after. It was like, I remember, and I don't know if you remember, Summer, but for the next couple nights, I couldn't sleep.
Right.
I was like, what is going on with my body? And I was shaking really bad. Thanks, Max. Tissue time. And I think Summer could probably tell you, she probably had never seen me cry before then. Yeah. And I couldn't control it.
Is that true, Summer?
Maybe once or twice he cried. Not for it. He didn't cry.
But nothing like nothing like that. I mean, not Summer, like she made the comment, oh my gosh, my husband's emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of, I actually like that.
Yeah, she's like,
you cried when you got married, right?
Yeah, yes. I did cry a lot at that wedding. Yes, I cried and cried when we were getting married. But to me, I was just like, what is going on with my body? I had to leave the bed. I went down on the couch, and I just couldn't stop shaking. And that lasted for like two or 3 days. And I'm like, what is going on with me? Now, Summer's birthday was the next day. And so I remember when I got
January up. January 31.
Yes, that day I have a birthday.
Wow.
So I just remember waking up, and I just looked at her, and I just said, I am sorry. I don't have anything planned for your birthday or anything like that. And she gave me a big hug and just said, this is the best
birthday gift I could have. I was glad to have a husband for my birthday.
Yeah, you're here. Yeah.
And in my mind, I do care a lot about people, and of course, I was caring probably more about the Ride family than I was Summer for a birthday or anything else. So I was just like, oh, I just want
to. He threw himself into caring for the Ride family. I think that's probably how he dealt with things he was feeling, because he really took good care of them and spent a lot of time that next week and forward taking care of them.
Or just trying to be there, I guess, in a way, but.
Yeah.
But so that's, I think for me, that's, it opened a new stage of life for me, because the emotion came out. Max and I, we went right back to work, our next scheduled shift, and everybody thought we were crazy. And the first thing we did was stop on a motor's assist. dispatch was IMing us going, are you guys crazy?
In the same location.
Ooh.
And the guy's like, I'm surprised you guys stopped. When I, why? He goes, I just got out of prison. And that's what happened with the other guy. So, I mean, yeah, you have to go back to work in that. And I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into, to me, you know, we see things, and Brad and Max, you know, in law enforcement, crazy things. And we go home and sometimes just move on with life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I was trying to do. It's just like, okay, this is part of our job. It's part of our career. These are things that could possibly happen. And you move on with life. And unfortunately, in that first year, I experienced depression for the first time. Hmm. And Max probably...
Maybe not for the first time, but...
Well, a real depression. There you go.
Thank you, Summer.
Summer's good time. Most of my coworkers would probably say, "Oh, you're the cheery, happy, smiley guy that never has any issues."
Yeah, but we hide it well.
Yeah, and then you go home, and who sees it more than anybody? My wife.
Yeah.
I was moody with Summer, and you look back and think, why? She's amazing. You know, how could I like be so manlike? But I really felt that's a deep, deep depression. Like, I felt dark. I felt, when I say dark, like my mind was just, it wasn't all there. I felt like there was times like I wanted to fight at work. Like, I hope someone wants to fight us today. And then I got to the point where I didn't want to go to work, or if I came home somewhere else, I just want to lay on the bed.
Yeah.
I didn't want to communicate with anybody. I didn't want to solve and care about any of the problems that was going on at home, nor did I sometimes even see it.
Yeah.
You know, you want to say more, Summer.
I do want to get her perspective, but yes, keep going. This is great.
For me, I was going to work it out myself.
Yeah.
I didn't need anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time, I didn't realize all the stuff Max was going through. I think I was just, I was, unfortunately, I was more focused on myself and nobody else. And at the time, I'm thinking, this is just my problem. I don't need to do anything about it.
Right.
I don't want anybody else to help me with it. And I'll just, Summer knows I am the quiet upsetter. Like, I go quiet, and I'll try to solve it by either sleeping it off and waking up the next morning and think everything's good. And
well, typically
but it wasn't.
People in that situation find themselves feeling very alone, very isolated, feeling I'm the only one going through this, feeling like a burden, or like they could be a burden if they talk about it. Any of those resonate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, be a burden on that. And I think when I got emotional talking about my kids, I just thought, man, what if this was me?
Right.
You know, Summer would have been left here with all these kids. And then I see my kids, and maybe in the older kids, maybe a little fear of like, Dad, do you still want to do this? And I remember when I walked in, when Summer gave me a hug, she said, are you sure you still want to be a cop?
Yeah.
And I didn't even hesitate. Yeah. I was like, yes, this is an amazing profession, but man, gosh dang it, there's some sucky situations that come about.
And I think, you know, you'll probably agree, like, we all know it's a dangerous job, but then when all of a sudden you're face to face with something that close to us, you know what I mean? It just became all that more real.
Yeah.
Not only to us, but to our families, our kids and things like that, you know, just became, wow, this kind of stuff does happen here. You know, everybody thinks in a smaller town, you know, yeah. I mean, quiet little town, whatever, that, you know, those things don't happen, but when they do, you know, it just kind of smacks you in the face and you're like, man, this is real. This is, and you know, for the ones at home, it makes them twice as nervous. You know what I mean? I mean, they're nervous a lot of times when you go to work anyway,
sure.
You know, and just a
normal day, yeah.
You know, so I'm sure there's a lot of nervousness and whatnot. And at home, when we do go back to work.
Well, the great thing is we have a home perspective right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were you seeing? Summer? What?
And Garrett?
Yeah.
Well, Garrett had always like struggled with anxiety and depression. He did struggle with depression and anxiety before this happened.
I don't think so.
He struggled.
I had my moments.
Thank you, Garrett.
No, he was in denial of his moments, and it was very stressful on me.
It's okay. Open up, Summer.
And I didn't communicate to him about it. He didn't realize that his anxiety and depression like had me on pins and needles all the time. But after the incident, it intensified. And I was just on pins and needles for the next couple of years, like wondering when.
What does that look like? Pins and, when you say pins and needles, what does that look like?
That looks like me keeping the house and everything perfect.
Ah.
So there's nothing that can set off the anxiety and depression because I didn't like seeing my husband get depressed or, you know, I didn't like seeing him completely shut down and, you know, wondering because he was severely depressed and he was sometimes suicidal and would sometimes leave, you know, and I didn't know he was coming back. It consumed me and I was like trying to keep everybody perfect, keep the kids perfect. Let's all have a perfect home life.
Right.
And it was very stressful. Like it really wore on me and I didn't feel like I had any right to be depressed or anxious myself because I hadn't gone through it. And so, I don't know, I think it took a toll on my mental health and it took a toll on me as a parent. I mean, finally, yes. And I didn't communicate any of this to him because I didn't want to burden him with that because he already had his own burdens. So I was silently suffering for a long time.
Sure.
Did you want Garrett to go back to work? I know you asked him, do you still want to do this? But did you want him to go back?
Yes, because sometimes he was grumpy at home.
Get out.
Grumpy. And here's the thing, though. In my mind, I remember the good times. I don't remember.
You don't remember being grumpy?
No, I remember. I got upset every once in a while. But. Yeah.
So I'll rephrase it. Did you want him to continue being a cop? Not just go back to work, but did you want him to continue being?
Well, I was okay with it. I knew that he's a very careful, thoughtful person. So like I had already seen the worst of what could happen but I already accepted, you know, the fact before that incident, I'd accepted the fact that he could die at work. And so like, yes, that could happen, but, I trusted him. I trusted that the best case scenario would probably happen that I don't know. I just, if it was going to happen, it was going to happen.
Right.
So he was very happy being a cop. We'd worked hard to get to a place where he enjoyed his job.
And you guys know law enforcement consumes you. So I think, I was happier. I'm a workaholic. Summer knows that with my previous jobs. I'm just like, I will please the employer sometimes more than I'll do what I need to for family. And Summer knows that. And I've gotten a lot better than I was.
A little more balanced now.
Yeah. But it was just like, oh, they need me now. I got to go do this. And, you know, you drop what you're doing and away
that's
you go.
That's the high percentile of our profession is geared that way. That
there is something about law enforcement that's just is. Like, wow. This
is very much so.
You know.
Yeah. So was there during this, and we're early, we're talking early and, you know, this has just happened. So, you know, weeks, you know, after Corey's death. You're seeing, are you recognizing that your life is heavily impacted, Summer, in this? Or are you still you're just kind of in it. You're just like, let's get through the day.
Yeah. When I had a new baby, Garrett's, had your dad, had your stepdad died yet?
So, yeah, my stepdad, who was, good grief, him and my mom got married in 81. And so he'd been, you know, that father figure in my life. And so he passed away in April.
Wow.
Or actually the end of March. His funeral was in April. But he ended up passing away, you know, just a couple months after.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on. He passed away. And then his mom, Garrett's mom, she had Alzheimer's. Her husband's death really accelerated the Alzheimer's. Yeah. So we were spending a lot of time going up to Orem, which is, you know, 30 minutes mm-hmm. away.
We ended up just a couple months. By the end of 2014, we moved to Orem to help take care of my mom.
Yeah, we bought Garrett's mom's house because she needed to be relocated and so we could be closer. So again, there was a lot going on the 6 months after Corey died.
Do you want to hear a fun fact about Garrett's
mom and stepdad? I would love a fun fact.
This is pretty cool.
Garrett's mom and stepdad and my mom and dad were in Amway together. Well, it was Amway, and then they broke off into a company called Alpha 7, which was just a break off of Amway. So I grew up with my mom
Amway
and dad.
Amway
kids. We're Amway brats, right?
Yeah.
So Garrett would come to my house when we were, I don't know how old, and for different parties and stuff, and we didn't even know each other. But yeah, his mom and stepdad and my mom and dad were in this company together.
So for the
years.
Listeners who don't know what Amway is.
Does anybody not know what Amway is?
I feel like most people do. Nobody wants to talk bad about Amway.
Yeah, you just buy all kinds of stuff, you know, and then fill your house and your garage and any empty bedroom in your house with, you know, these
Amway shit.
Amway
stuff,
cleaning supplies and soaps and
home security systems.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. And then you go sell it to other people, you know. And I mean, I find two people, you find two people, and those two people find two people, you know. I mean, it was, but yeah, my mom, dad, and then Ree and Bard were heavily involved in that for a lot of years.
And we didn't make that link until we were working together as coworkers. Yeah. So, like, wait a minute.
That's awesome.
Anyway.
So you lost your dad in March, buried him in April.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a lot going on.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't feel stressful. I just was trying to make everything
right.
Move forward. Summer knows, just like with the family and that, I just kind of took charge of the funeral and making sure my mom had her needs met and that we just, you know, we I don't know, just jumped in. But at the same time, I guess in the back, there's still events that are brewing in me that I'm just not, I just don't want to talk.
And that's you're still summer, keeping summer, you're still knocking it out with the perfect house.
Just keeping things under.
Yeah.
keeping things going forward.
How about the, and tell me if this is an off limits conversation portion of the conversation, but how about the kids? Are they impacted by this? Are you protecting them, guarding them? Are they exposed to this? Do they see what's going on?
You know, I think we're trying to protect them. We didn't really confide in them. I don't think we really realized what was going on, honestly.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure that it affected our oldest. I'm sure it affected Austin. I think the rest of them were just too young to
know what was going
on. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's gotta take a lot of energy to make sure that the home is not impacted from that. So you got kids that you're wanting to buffer
mm-hmm.
from any of that hurt. and pay. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I didn't have a problem coming home and talking to the kids about like situations through the day. It was like, all right, we busted this guy for doing drugs, and this is why you shouldn't do drugs, or those type of stories. I never really did talk.
Oh, by the way, my partner got killed in a vicious lane.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't until I think last year or the year before that that I set all the kids down and I went through my situation of that event. And you know,
how did that go?
It actually went pretty well. I think my youngest, she worries. She's a worrywart.
Yeah, she's got dad's anxiety.
Yeah, so she worries. Yeah. You know, she wants nobody to get hurt and everything perfect. And but I think it's good. I think it's good to talk. And I'm going to jump into a year after this event.
Okay. Yeah,
this is Max has encouraged me to go to coworkers. I didn't really want to.
Why?
I don't know. I think at the time it was just like, because I heard it was like therapy. Now, I'll be honest with you. Summer had encouraged me to go to counseling.
Okay.
And I said, no.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I was like, I can fix this myself. Yeah. I was like, I can do this myself. And then she's like, no, you need help. She even made the comment, either you're going or I'm going.
To
deal with me.
Well, and to be fair, he thought if he went to therapy, he'd lose his job.
That was
pretty common.
He thought he didn't want anybody to know he had things that he was dealing with.
Because you're a cop, you're a man, and you deal with it.
Right.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, and again, I'll point to that. I think people at work that I didn't have any issues. Because when I'm at work, I was, I feel like I was still the same person, but at home, I don't know. More
had a little anger issues.
Angry.
Yeah. 95% of the time, he's sunshine and happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's those down moments.
And those down moments are pretty deep and dark.
Most people listening to this podcast get it. They have either experienced themselves or seen it or been exposed to it or understand. I mean, this is.
Nobody likes the dark side of dad.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. But it's the reality of why we do this.
Yeah. I mean,
this entire podcast is built upon the fact that no one has to do this by themselves, and you're a living example of the mindset we try to, you know. And I think I'm so grateful that you're on here because you're doing the very thing. Is listen, this was me. I tried to do it by. Max tried to do it by. We're all like, we can do this. Oh, but I can't. You know, and that's why we do this.
And I think now we can talk about it.
Right.
Back then, Summer was like, I want to talk about it, but if I say something, I'm going to bark at her.
Yeah. He's going to bark at her or get depressed because then he's going to feel
how
like
how would you introduce
failure.
Those conversations? I mean, how would you? I'm sure you took like several different paths. Like,
honey, I want to talk to you, but I don't want you to get mad. I'm going to say something.
Can I ask you a question?
Okay, well, no, actually, if you want to know how it happened, how the conversation finally opened up, it was that conversation of, hey, on one of the bad days, hey, I think you need to go to therapy or else I'm going to have to go to therapy. And then we went to therapy and that's where I told him everything. And that was kind of, it was kind of a bad day. If you can tell
your
story.
Told him everything.
Okay.
Because we went to therapy, right? She's like, I'm going to find.
It was therapy for him.
A cop or a therapist or a counselor that is law enforcement trained. And so we found this guy and he's like, and he had the cowboy boots and the hat, kind of a big guy, and he puts his feet up on the desk when we go in there. And like, okay, so tell us what's going on. And before we went in, he called me in. We were out in the waiting office area, and he says, come on in. And I said, I look back, and I'm like, can my wife come with me? And he's like, if you want to. And I thought, well, sure. Go in, and we start talking, and Summer's like, and I'm like, and I remember looking at Summer like, and in my mind, here's my happy thought process. For some reason, I don't remember all those negative hard times. And I just want to reflect on the good times. So I was like, I felt like we had a good marriage. I felt like
he was oblivious of his behavior.
Yeah. What? so I was just.
It's if I told him his behavior, then he'd get mad when he ignored the behavior.
So we walk out of that, and Summer's like, "That was awesome," and I was like, "Screw that! Fun. I am not going back." I was so mad. I was like, "I thought we had a perfect marriage," type of thing, and she's like, "That was amazing." And so we went home, and I pouted for the next 5 days.
Of course you did.
He gave us a homework assignment. And I was just like, what does my childhood have to do with this? Because he wanted, like, how was your childhood? You know, how was your relationship with mom and dad and siblings and any traumatic type situations? And I was like, screw this.
This is dumb. You know?
I didn't want to do it. And then something clicked in my head that just said, you've got to change, because Summer sees something and I don't see it, but she sees it, and obviously it affected her because it all came out in that counseling meeting. But there was something that just changed with me. That's like, you've got to do this. And so we went to like five more.
What? Okay, sessions. Hold on. So what an incredible moment right there, that and truth that you just said. I'm going to expand on this. I want your viewpoints too, Max. But you actually paused and said, Summer sees something in me that I don't see.
Yeah.
And instead of what we're ingrained to do is ignore it and say, no, you're just being dramatic, or, you know, you're it can't be true. I'm not that person. This is In the spouse relationship, we've just placed our entire trust in our life into the care of our partner, but yet we're not willing to listen to them when they say something's going on with you. Yep, we ignore that, right?
And go ahead, Max. I can see you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't know if it's... We have a very hard time not feeling like we're in control. At work, we're in control. You know, we're in control of so many things. And I think it's hard when we get home to then maybe not be in control. And you know, and it's a hard conversation to have. And I think that goes way back to, you know, even before a incident like this with Corey. You know, how many times do we come home and talk to our spouse about, hey, today was a really bad day. Today sucked, you know, and for whatever reason, you know, I don't think we do that very well. And so then we don't do that when something big happens, right? And so now all of a sudden something big happens, like with Corey, and your spouse is trying to tell you something, and you're like, yeah, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't, you know, she just doesn't get it. I'm okay. I'm doing fine, you know. And we don't want to accept that, hey, we're kind of screwed up and I need some help. You know,
who knows us better?
That's why I invited her in. I was like, she knows me probably better than anything else. Right. And
then you regretted it as soon as she opened her mouth.
I was like, I smell like, what are you doing?
Stop talking.
You know, and I'm sure the therapist was like,
where did my wife
go? Yeah.
You know, and go ahead.
So I'll be honest. That was a pivotal moment. Like, I'm so grateful. I'm so eternally grateful that he was willing to listen, because it was scary for me to open up, because let's be honest, you know, things, we all have issues.
Sure.
And an event like this can intensify it and make the issues worse. But I've been holding things in for a long time, and to get brave and say, you know, I know nobody wants to tell somebody the things that they need to change.
Sure.
But I was really grateful that he listened, and it, because he was willing to listen, it opened up for the next couple of years a lot more conversations that have really taken our... We've always had a good marriage, but I think our marriage had a lot of improvement from that moment. That was a pivotal moment where we started to...
The word communication came into play there.
Yes. Both ways, because I wasn't communicating.
Right.
He wasn't communicating, and that was...
Well, it's commonly said that the spouse at home walks on eggshells after a critical incident, you know, especially something of this magnitude.
And one thing that at least I think we've learned is that this incident, it really wasn't the cause of my depression, anxiety. It probably added to it.
Exacerbated it.
But there was other things in life. And this, you know, therapist, he brought it out a couple of things, you know, just when I was 12 years old, went on my first scout camp out overnight, my best friend died. He fell off a cliff in Stuart Falls up in Provo Canyon.
Oh, by the way, I've got that little nugget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that and some other things that came into play. And Summer would remind me, she says, it's not just ride situation that's brought this out. It's a portion of it. But there's a lot of things that just kind of built up, and now your brain's probably overloaded and doesn't know what to do. And so I remember there was once I made the decision that I was going to go to therapy, there was a burden lifted off my shoulders. It was the weirdest thing, because I told someone, I said, I feel lighter. I don't feel so weighed down anymore.
Before you went?
After you. Yeah, after I made that decision, like, this is something we got to do. And we only went to that, we probably went four times to him. And that was funny, because the therapist was like, I need to know what it was that I said or had you do so I can help my other clients. And I'm like, I don't know what it is.
It was probably the shift in your brain, the way you thought about things, the decision to change. Shifted.
And I had gone to coworkers during that period also, did EMDR. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was something that shifted in the brain set on that one. But I just remember that decision to say, all right, I've got to change. Summer sees something. Apparently, I'm not saying that. There was a mind change.
I really want to acknowledge. Sorry, Max. Were you going to say? I really want to acknowledge that it takes. Let me back up and reframe that. I want to acknowledge your courageous step and actually hearing Summer say, I'm off. For you and for our listeners to say. To hear that point. That's a really important point, because the people we live with know it's better than anybody. And if we're not acknowledging this, we're missing something. We're missing our best life here if we at least don't acknowledge or listen and hear that message, the Summer message of something's off, you're off. You need to, there's some room for improvement here in every marriage, obviously, you know, but this is different. We're talking about something significantly different of being sad or depressed or hanging around sleeping all day and being angry, biting your, you know, being short. And I mean, this is different. And to your point that you've communicated well on this podcast, you didn't even see it. You didn't see these things, but Summer's not only seeing it, she's living it.
She's living and it. Yeah.
That happens so much out here in our community. Yeah.
And to be fair, I also realized that there was things that I needed to change too. One being, I needed to be willing to communicate instead of trying to take care of everything. Like I needed to let him know how I was feeling, like in a kind way.
Right.
But I didn't need to try and carry it. We were both trying to carry our burdens ourselves, and we needed to be carrying it together.
Well, I think it's interesting you bringing that up, because you said something early in the podcast of this event happened to him, and I would argue that this didn't just happen to him, it happened to you, you both within the marriage. And we see this all the time where it comes, I mean, it's coming home with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how you're going to deliver it and unpack it, you know. It's right, Max. I mean, it's coming home with you.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the term leave the badge at the door, because that's just crap. I mean, it does come home. I mean, and it can come home and you can deal with it together and work on things, or it can cause problems. It can cause big problems, you know. I was going to ask Summer, and maybe it's an unfair question, but where do you think you guys would be today had Garrett not listened to you and gone to counseling and realized that, hey, okay, maybe I'm a little messed up, you know?
Well,
I'd be in the she shed.
No, we'd still be together, because I'm very determined that way. He'd have to leave me. That's my personality. But I think that there would be tension between us, and I think that I would probably still be walking on eggshells. And yeah. I think that we wouldn't be living our best marriage or best relationship.
Mm-hmm. And the word communication comes back. Summer's willing to talk. She grew up in a family that when there was an issue, they all came together, said sorry, and talked about it. And my personality was, I'm just quiet. I do the silent treatment, which I know is not good.
It's not good.
And I just want to sleep it off, wake up the next morning, and as if nothing happened.
If you want to live by yourself, that's a great mode. But if you want to live with other people, you're going to have to talk.
Right? And that's where, we, through time, and it's mainly me, we've gone to where Summer's like, I want to talk to you about a subject. I don't want you to get mad about it. I want you to have an open mind about it. Because in the past, apparently I would, and now I feel like we can communicate with anything. Like right now doing this podcast talking and we can laugh and, I was that way. You're that way. That wasn't that way 10 years ago. It was, she really was on the eggshells and I was just in my own little world of trying to fix my own thing. And the communication, the ability to say, okay, I'm just going to listen, input your information without really getting too upset. And if I do get uptight about something, now I usually just tell Summer, I got to go lay down. Let me just go lay down for a minute. And my brain's over circuit, whatever it may be.
I think another thing that we've learned through this experience is to not worry so much about the image. Like the image of what we portray to other people, because that image can really, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here, but I think not worrying so much about the image and just living an authentic life, not worrying what other people think, has helped communication to be better.
No, I think that's a really I think that's a really valuable point. I think, oftentimes in our community, couples get caught up in that a lot. Well, not even couples, officers. I've got to portray something externally that I'm good, that I'm healthy for work so they don't pick up on something, or for home, or for, and then couples adopt that and embrace it. And we just need to pretend that everything's okay so people don't ask a lot of questions, because we haven't even figured out, let alone how to communicate it to somebody else, that something's going on in our home, you know? So I think it's a valuable point. And I do want to, for the listeners, I will paint a little bit of a word picture here. As we're sitting here talking, these two, you're delightful to get to know. I met you here this weekend. You've been a delight to get to know. But Summer's got her arm around Garrett, and they're snuggled up next to each. It's clear that you two still care very deeply about each other.
We do.
It's good to kind of paint that picture. So let's talk about coworkers. Okay. Have you been to coworkers for couples? Have you been to both?
Three times.
Awesome. So speak to, Garrett, you speak to the impact of coworkers retreat. Now, Max, why don't you set this up for us? Explain what the event is.
Yeah. So for the listeners, coworkers is it's put on by Concerns of Police Survivors. It's a co-workers retreat. So officers from all over the country that have lost a co-worker in the line of duty can come to this retreat. Most of the time, the retreat itself is paid for by National. The travel is usually paid for by their local chapter. So in most cases, it's a free trip. That's kind of what sold it on me a little bit the first time, and even though I didn't want to go. It's a retreat in Potosi, Missouri, little backwoods area, lake of Potosi. Show up and you get off the bus and there's all kinds of people just laughing and joking and having a good time. And you're like, holy crap, what did I get myself into? Why are all these people laughing and joking?
Because I don't want to be here.
Because I don't want to be here. Yep. I mean, I want to be anywhere but here. Yeah. And
it's where you and I met.
Right. Yep. And it was, those first few years that I went were rough.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go in, they have counselors there that specialize in law enforcement and this kind of deal. They, you have a debriefing, and that was one of the worst things that I hated. And but I mean, as good as it was, as bad as it was really, really good.
Yeah,
it gives you time to go. And I think in my situation, even though Garrett and I were close and worked together, you know, I felt like I was going through things that nobody else understood.
Right.
I think that's general. I think that's common across the country. I didn't feel like anybody in my department understood the things that I'd gone through.
Right.
But you go back to the coworkers and you're in your debriefing and, you know, I'm telling my story, which was incredibly hard to get through, went through a whole box of tissues to do it. But then the person next to me tells their story and I'm like, holy cow, that's like almost identical. Like they understand
right.
what I'm going through. Right. They get it. You know, I mean, that not an
the
identical
beauty
situation.
That's the beauty of it right there.
It's like all of a sudden these people in this room become your people.
Sure.
And they become your friends and lifelong friends that you connect with. While you're away from the retreat, while, you know, you're excited to go back to the retreat, because these are the people that understand you. They've been through sure. the crap with you, you know, the same kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that's the best way to heal. Yeah. I mean, I think to be around people that have been through a similar circumstance and they understand what you've gone through.
Now, Garrett, you're super excited about going to coworkers.
I enjoy it. I've only been, let's see. No, I was not. Max said, hey, you're going to go, because he'd gone the first year with some other coworkers, and I, you know, to experience it. And all I saw was pictures of them holding painted mugs.
Yeah.
You know, they went to ceramics.
One of those coolest parts.
Yeah.
And I was just like.
Arts and crafts.
What are you doing there? You know,
so dumb.
So yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. Went and like Max was saying, I think sitting in a circle with other officers and not a big circle.
Yeah.
And you're like, what are we gonna do here? You know, and like Max was saying, then you share your story and then you hear the others and you're just like, wow, it's not like the debriefing that our sheriff's office tried to do. Is a totally different type of debriefing the experience. And I think every year going back and talking about it, I think for myself, just talking about it helps.
Sure.
Big, big, big time. Sure. And I think it helps others to see that, you know, it's been years for us and we still come back to help others that have just, it's fresh. For them and
right.
I don't know, there's just connection there. And then the EMDR I think was a big it really helped.
It's an amazing,
it's voodoo
feeling to know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
As a wife, I saw a big impact from that first one. Yeah, I could see a lot of healing and a lot of, like, it was another one of those pivotal moments, like in our marriage. It was really good for him. I was so glad that he went to it.
So the coworkers for couples, then tell us about your.
I loved it. It was so much fun. Yeah. It was good. And for me, like I got to do EMDR there. I don't know how many hours of EMDR did I do?
Oh, at least three.
I did. I think I probably did 5 hours of EMDR.
Look who's messed up now.
Yeah.
I did a lot of unpacking
and I come back crying. Like, I think I did two or three sessions.
I think you, all I know is your last one. We were all playing games, like, where is Summer? And then she comes down, you can tell she'd been crying. Oh, yeah. I was like, are you okay? And she's like,
no.
Oh man, EMDR was the best thing I've ever done. Not in the moment. In the moment it was pretty it was rough, and I think for a couple months afterwards, like, I was still, like, processing things, but I could see so much healing. We went to the next year to coworkers, and I had grown and healed so much in between those two sessions of coworkers. Like, it was pretty awesome, and I would totally recommend it to anybody, no matter whether you've been through a traumatic incident or not. Like, I think everybody holds trauma, and EMDR is just wonderful.
It's a good little EMDR advertisement right there. Good job.
I think we've all been through trauma, whether we realize it or not.
It's true.
Right. The MDR helps us helps us realize. Yeah. Oh, crap.
Yes. Yeah. We all go through trauma, whether we've seen somebody die or not. We have, you know, we all have had trauma in different ways.
So how are we doing today? Like, let's kind of wrap this up and say, how is Garrett and Summer?
I'll let you speak the first word on that
one. We are doing awesome.
Yes.
You look like it.
Amazing.
Yeah. We're very happy, very in sync, very in tune with each other.
And what would, if you were giving the listeners, like, let's just, I'll kind of tee this up in length to give you a little bit of time to think about it. But if you were to give the listeners three things as to why you're doing well today in regards to Corey's death or the life you were living or the law enforcement, if there were three little nuggets, you would say, here's why. Because you look happy.
I'll give you my three words.
You look nauseatingly happy, by the way. You too. Yeah.
The thing I think that keeps us
actually
going.
let me back up for that and reframe it from a cop's perspective, three things, and a spouse perspective, three things. How about that? So
I'm going to use the communication word again.
Yeah.
Communication, listening with patience.
Yuck.
And an amazing, supportive, loving wife. I think the spouse is the, she is the one that when I feel down or I can't do that, she's always been the one that picks me up and just like.
Yeah, but that takes an investment, right? That takes a, you've got to invest in her.
Yes.
To make sure that that stays in a supportive manner.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't just happen.
No. I think if you show that, I think that change of like, okay, I'm going to make a change.
Yeah.
I'll listen.
Yeah.
I'll talk. What can we do to make
it better? So do you listen better now?
He does. He really does. I can say the hard things now. And I mean, I try to say it nicely, but I can tell him, you know, hey, I'm angry about this or I didn't like this, whatever. He will listen. I can communicate. I feel like we are now on, like we both have the same, well, we've always had the same goals, but I don't know. I feel like we can communicate now. We are united and I don't know. Like,
no, I think it's
the communication is a big thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And being able to communicate.
Yep. So three things that a spouse you would give wisdom to the spouses on your journey?
Okay. So if I was to give wisdom to the spouses, it's important to be able to communicate and listen. It is important to think about not so much what can they do to change, but what can I do to make the relationship better? What can I do? Because you can't change somebody else.
Right.
And then just try to find the things that you love about your spouse. Even if it's hard, find the things that you love about your spouse and find the things that you know, originally loved about them. Even when you're in the hard times, think about them first.
Yeah. Love that.
You've learned to, Garrett, I'm sure you've learned to be vulnerable. I think that's a big thing that you know, to break down. It's okay to be emotional with your wife. You know what I mean? It's sometimes we feel like we have to be tough and stuff in front of our wives and our kids and stuff. And I think learning to be vulnerable is a big,
yeah.
And I'd say it's okay to cry. And I've broke down in front of the kids and talked about things that just mean so much to me. And they can see I get a little emotional, not all the time, but yeah, dad has a sensitive side to him every once in a while.
He's real.
So I think real. Garrett and I both failed in a lot of ways. He mentioned earlier in the podcast that, you know, he didn't sit his kids down and talk to them about the whole incident until a year ago. So this was 10 years ago. The first time my kids and my wife heard the whole incident, they knew what happened that day, but it was when I spoke at our gala in Utah.
Yeah.
And I told the whole story, and that's the first time my kids had heard it, and they were like bawling and just, you know, and I'm thinking, man, that's a huge parent fail and a huge husband fail, as I should have sat them down years ago and said, hey, this is the stuff that dad went through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And explain things to them rather than So, yeah.
I think also stop worrying about what other people think about you. Stop worrying about your image. Stop worrying about both of us.
Yeah.
And realize you're not alone. Other people are going through crap too. And you don't need to hide it and pretend like your life is perfect.
Such great advice. Garrett and Summer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you guys coming on.
It was fun.
Yeah. Max, any final words?
I'm good.
So we're back at the conference. We're going to go from here. We're going to go back downstairs and dig into the conference a little more and hear some great speakers and have some great conversations. So thank you guys so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's first responder resiliency program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.